And if you guys could just introduce yourselves and tell us who you are and what it is that you do.
Hello, everybody. I want to start off by saying thank you to Complex Creative. They are our presenting sponsor for the brunch, so shout out to y'all.
Shout out to us.
And all the other Black-owned businesses that have helped to bring this event together today, so I really appreciate y'all. My name is Janelle Henry, co-founder of Black August in the Park. My 9-to-5, I work in sexual and reproductive health, so I am a clinic improvement and linking specialist. I'm not going to tell y'all where I work, but what I do is to work with clinics in Greensboro and High Point to make sure that they are team friendly.
Janelle, are you from High Point? From Greensboro?
No, I'm from Durham.
Okay. We talked about it. You got a little twang in your accent.
What like, is real country?
No, it's not.
What kind of twang?
We can move on.
Hello, my name is Moses Ochola. I am a manager and owner of the Palace International. and the Vault, which is an event space right below the restaurant. That's my day job from 9 to 9.
Day and night job.
Toe to toe.
Actually, probably longer than that because you're an entrepreneur. So. All right. Oh, it's your turn.
Hi, everybody. I'm Crystal Taylor. My 9-to-5 is I do a lot of contract work for Blue Cross and Blue Shield North Carolina, North Carolina Central University, Duke University, and whoever else likes to hire me, project manager for hire. And I'm from Clinton, North Carolina, and I'm a graduate of North Carolina Central University.
Eagle Pride. I don't know why y'all keep getting mad. With that being said, and all that Eagle Pride, we're gonna go straight to Derek.
Aggie Pride.
Exactly. I'm Derek Beasley. I'm from Durham as well. I'm a visual artist. I also work with Student U, and our incredible executive director, Alex Zach Bayou, is over there. Everybody give a round of applause to Alex Zach Bayou.
Madam.
And so we're a college access organization.
Okay, that's all you got. That's all you got. All right, Joshua.
Peace, Gunn. Y'all. My name is Joshua Gunn. Also a Durham native. Also a proud graduate of North Carolina A&T State University. Aggie Pride. All right. Thank you. Obligatory Aggie Pride. I am a hip hop artist. I have been a hip hop artist most of my entire life. So I create music, I tour, I own my own production company called Red Eye Lifestyle. Also proud co-founder of Black August in the Park. Also a partner in the co-working space that's in this building, Provident 1898, which is on the concourse level of this building and expanding to several other floors. So shameless plug, if anyone wants to tour and see the space, we'd be happy to walk you through that space anytime. Also vice president at the Greater Durham Chamber of Commerce. Also a dad of two, a husband, and a proud Durhamite. So I got hella 9-to-5s. So
yeah, 9 to 9 the next day. That's what y'all have. Well, thank you all for introducing yourselves. I'm curious though, because I remember the first time I went to Black August in the Park. It felt like a huge cookout. Like I felt like, you know, when I walked in, I heard before I let you go, like the original version, you know, it felt nice. Nah, you know, beyond, that was shade. It was a whole forest full of shade. But the magic in the air was undeniable. The way that it felt, you had a sign at the front that said, "Your blackness is welcome here." The way that that felt, the way that it made me feel, it was just something I never thought that I would see here in Durham. What did it take for you all to come together as a group and say, "This is needed. Let's do this thing and let's do it like this"? I don't know if you guys realize how big of a deal this is to our community, but I'm curious, what were the steps? What was the scenario like? Were you guys just sitting in a room, having a drink over some whiskey? Like, how did that come together? Anyone can answer that one. Is there someone peeking? There is a person. All right.
Yeah, I'm going to start it off, but I want you all to finish it. So when the inception of Black August in the Park never was, what it is today is not what I thought it would be. It's something we wanted, something I thought would be really cool and was needed with the changing environment in Durham. I then reached out to my friends who had incredible gifts individually and would help me in terms of my weaknesses. And I thought I thought that we had the opportunity to do something very special. And at that time, I honestly would have been happy with 200 people being in the park. The community said otherwise and has continued to. I don't know if that's detailed enough. Do y'all have anything to add?
I like it. Who else has something? Oh, that's it?
We were sitting outside of the palace, and I remember mosquitoes biting my legs, and I was like, are we going to do this? Can we do this so we can go? Because I'm ready to go home now. And then we were thinking like maybe 200 or 500 people would come or something.
No, I think y'all were like, it's going to be 1,000 people. Then I was like, nah, it's going to be like 300.
Yeah.
Y'all we didn't had think, big, I, bigger dreams than I did.
I didn't think that it was going to be that many people. I mean, I knew we'd be lucky if we got like 500 people. Yeah. But I remember the day of, and then all these people look at me and Janelle were like, oh my God, look at all these people out here.
They come early too.
Yeah, I remember conversations about 300 being the number, and I think in the planning stages with like police and all the necessary sort of city requirements, I think the plan was like 300. And honestly, I thought that we were overshooting it a little bit because I wasn't really clear on what it was. I was like, okay, y'all want to do this thing? Like, yeah, let's do it. But I don't know that I was clear on how special it would be. And I think we were just responding to what we saw as a need and kind of our own desire just to have community and carve out space for Black folks in Durham. But yeah, that first year was crazy just to see, you know, I don't know, over 1,000 people show up. And I don't know that any of us were prepared. So it's kind of been a work in progress since then.
You got something to add, Derek? Everyone's spoken but you. Yeah. I don't know if you want
to. Yeah, I didn't realize that. the first year was incredible. It definitely, I think as soon as, after that day was over, we were like, oh, this is a thing, and this is going to be a thing for a minute. And it's almost like a responsibility, an increased sense of responsibility around it to make sure that we, make the best space for Black folks in Durham that we can so we can all get free.
So we can all be free. I love it. I'm still curious. Why? Do you all, I'm sure you all have different reasons. You all have your own individual why behind doing this. What were the reasons behind why you all decided to do it? I mean, this is ambitious. You know, Gunnar, as you just said, you didn't know that it was gonna be what it is. And you're still doing it 5 years later. I don't know if you guys have planned on this being the last one or you can continue to go, but I have a feeling that this is going to continue to go.
I thought it was going to be big. Janelle was like, relax. But I was like, this thing is going to be big.
Yeah.
I didn't know how big it was going to get, but in my head, I was like, yeah, this is going to be big.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted, at least.
So what is it? Why is it important to y'all to do this event?
Well, I mean, for me, my mom went to Central and I have family in Durham. And I remember before the second one, she was here visiting and she said, we were driving downtown and she said, where are all the Black people? And for my mom, who's 71 years old, to say that, let me know that's why. And also when I go to Durham Central Park and I see these apartments and we have pictures from where they weren't there, that's another reason why, you know what I mean? So it's like for my mom to be here from when she was in school here to say, where are all the Black people? And then when she came to Black Oaks and Park, oh, well, here they are. That made me feel like a push to, you know, the motivation to be able to do that.
Yeah, so similar to Crystal, I think my parents were one of the two reasons that was really important to me. My parents had the palace in the 80s in Durham, downtown Durham, North Carolina. And Durham was very, very, very different then on Paris Street, so right across the street from you all. So my parents started the original palace with the ambition of introducing people to the diaspora, to African culture, and connecting people at a time when the city was a ghost town. So in continuing that legacy and then also growing up here and seeing how much the city has changed, it was really important for me to make sure we create space for black people, but also interrupt white spaces that are changing and are continuously changing to make sure that not only people in Durham here recognize that this is our city too, but that there's a connection between the diaspora at large to the Caribbeans and the continent.
Anyone?
Yeah, just to echo that same sentiment, I think one of the reasons why I wanted to be a part of the Black August movement is similar to what Moses and Crystal shared, just like the elders and my father and my grandfather being Durhamites and hearing stories about how Durham was this mecca for black folks, you know what I'm saying? My great-grandfather moved here soon after emancipation and because Durham was the promised land for black folks, right? My ancestors were enslaved in Yanceyville, which is just north of Greensboro. And, you know, soon after freedom, they started to hear stories about this place called Durham, where there were opportunities for black folks and there were safe spaces for black folks to build family and build community. And so I was raised with that pride, and gradually moving back to Durham in 2012, moving downtown in 2012 and seeing this gradual displacement of black people, black businesses, black culture, and this sort of whitening of Durham, I felt like it was important to help continue to create space for black people. And as Moses said, a little bit of this movement started with our discussions about interrupting white spaces and just being present, just being visible as black people at the new hotel or the new park or the new restaurant, just to make sure that they see us and that they remember that this is a black city and a chocolate city with some rich black history. And the thing I love about Black August is that it's loud. It's very in your face. It's like, unapologetically and explicitly black in a way that I've never experienced before. You know, the closest thing for me was my HBCU experience, but I think Black August is even more all-encompassing of black folks. You know, it tries to sort of avoid that elitism that some of our black institutions have and really be a community space for all people across the diaspora. So I'm really proud of it. And I think it's needed here and ideally everywhere, but I'm happy that it's in Durham.
You touched on something. You all are kind of touching on the same thing that I've been thinking about. And Joshua, you and I have sat in a lot of meetings where we've had these conversations. But Durham has changed. I can't even say that Durham is changing. Durham has changed. It's a different place. And I feel that us as black people, we have our own culture. We have cultures. But for some reason, it scares people. I don't know what it is, but for some reason, you know, we play our drums a little too loud, it scares people. You know, you say in a song, I'm black and I'm proud, it scares people. You know, why do you guys feel that, and maybe you don't agree with me on that, but for some reason our blackness tends to you know, intimidate people. Why is that? Any one of you can take it.
I don't know if I can answer that directly. Outside of just global white supremacy. But I think I saw a video on Instagram this morning with like 50 or 60 white people downtown playing djembes and doing African dance. And that's kind of part of my why. I feel like Durham has explicitly reached out to all types of historically gentrifying communities to attract them to Durham so we can live into some idea of this progressive city. And in the midst of that, you know, there's 800 evictions averaging a month last year, and it's like 500 or something plus this year. And black folks are slowly not becoming less and less a part of that narrative. And I think it's events like Black August in the Park that don't just, and you know, Juneteenth and Bembe and all of these black festivals and events that make black people more visible, but also help build infrastructure for us to be successful. So with Black August in the Park, it's one of our values is all black everything. And you see our values very dopely as curated by Janelle, printed on these cozies?
Dollies.
Is it dollies or dolly? Is it?
I say dollies, but that might be that twang you was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
It's dolly.
That's the twang.
Don't listen to me, I'll confuse
on these paper lace things on the table.
It's nice,
they're
though.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. Shout out to Sanelsa.
And so read those values, and those are the things that we hold true to, that we try to hold true to. And so for us, like, you know, being able to employ other Black folks, to give opportunities for folks to have access to new markets, to give other people access to our human capital and our creative capital, and to be able to share that throughout Durham for other businesses and organizations is like, it's not just, that's our way of kind of reimagining the Black Wall Street. It doesn't have to be a street. It can be a network, a system of people working together to make sure that we all thrive. You
know. I love it. I tell people that all the time. Black Wall Street is no longer just a street. It should be a community. It should be a system of ecosystems, if you could think about that. Cities that connect to each other, almost like the Underground Railroad. That's what I feel like Black Wall Street should be now. Do you have something to add to that?
You know I do.
I can tell. I can look at your face and tell. You have that look. I want to say something.
You know, to your point about Blackness being, what did you say? Blackness, people are scared of it.
There's people are threatened
associated
by
it. With it.
Yeah, some people are threatened by it.
To Beasley's point, you know, global white supremacy, sort of how we're indoctrinated into Western society around what it means to be Black and whether or not you should claim it, you know what I'm saying? And I think in an era where Blackness is not only being co-opted, right, for marketing and branding purposes, and people want to be associated with Blackness but not explicitly say Black, and in an era where, you know, the terms like people of color are used and minority are used and urban are used when we're actually talking about Black folks, I think it's important to explicitly say Black and own Blackness when you're talking about Black people. There's times when you're talking about people of color. There's times when you're talking about minorities in general. But when we're talking about Black culture, Black art, Black music, Black resistance, Black joy and Black love, it's super important to say Black and be proud of that. And which is why I'm inspired by these four people up here, because they consistently educate me and push me to lean into my own Blackness more and to encourage others to do the same, right? Because, you know, we're often taught that Blackness is some sort of scar, right? Or something that we should hide or run from, but it's something that we should elevate and celebrate every single day. So, and especially in a climate where they're trying to whitewash us, you know what I'm saying? And get rid of us, so, yeah.
Why do you think that, you know, here in Durham specifically, when they speak of just measures to improve or measures to grow in terms of economic development, this happens. You know, what is it about that system? And let me be clear, for anyone that doesn't know this, when it comes to economic development, when it comes to building cities and injecting money into cities, this happens. You know, you do start to see the minority populations getting pushed out. You see the people of color, and I say people of color because I'm also including, you know, my Latino and Latina brothers and sisters as well. You see them pushed out as well. You're probably seeing some of that happen in Durham, just a few blocks over. Well, I'm just going to say it, in Lakewood. You may have seen some of that. But, you know, why is that a part of that system? Because this is happening all over the entire nation. Why?
I think it's laziness and lack of imagination. I think it takes work to create new systems that aren't inherently exploitative. And our dominant system is capitalism, which is inherently exploitative. And so it takes work to reimagine how we can be in community with each other without it being transactional, or without us feeling like we need to leverage something to come out on top on a deal. If there's a situation where we can be mutually beneficial, that's what we should be thriving for. And so I think, it's just imagination and daring to have that imagination in the face of other entities that we partner with or that we are working with or that fund us, daring to resist that. And even in the small moments, and not just in a social justice movement context, in our everyday business practices, you know, what do we really care about, and how do we turn those values that we have on a micro level when we're doing when we're interacting interpersonally? How do we manifest those values on a macro level, institutionally, at the places we work, whether we work at a doctor's office or a restaurant or insurance agency or a sexual health clinic or,
a co-working space or the Durham Chamber of Commerce or at a college access organization. So
the transactional piece, the capitalism piece, you know, capitalism is capitalism. It is what it is. And it could be argued that this is the system that we use. This is the system that the United States is built on. And you could say that maybe we need to learn, or maybe we need to start practicing certain things in order to take those values and utilize those values to build our own ecosystems. You could say that. You could say that, you know, maybe it's a thing where we need to go into these places where we work and we convince people, look, this is who we are, these are our values, and this is the way that things need to be. Maybe, I don't know. The creativity piece though. When I talk about economic development, I usually mention this creative economy. I mention this piece of it because I feel that this piece is one of the things that drives economic development. Artists, groups like Black August in the Park, designers, historic organizations, that's what drives communities. You know, if you guys, well, actually it's not online yet, but Dasan, when we were speaking at one of the conversations before, he talked about how you will have artists in a place and that place will start blowing up. People will want to go to that place because artists are there, because there's music, because there is art, whatever the case may be. People will want to go there, and then those artists, they can't afford to be there anymore. You know, where I'm from, in Charlotte, we had NoDa, we had South End, we had Charlotte. That's what we had. Now it's something else. So, you know, with me saying all of that stuff, is this something that can be done? I want to hear from you. I know what I think. I know what my opinion of it is, but is this paradigm shift something that is possible? And if it is possible, what do you see Black August in the Park as being a catalyst behind that happening?
Can you specify which paradigm shift you're talking about exactly?
So people thinking differently about how to grow, you know, to Beasley's point. People thinking differently, what does that look like? Here are our values and this is how we operate. You know, if that's how y'all operate, and I'm just saying if I'm the man, so to speak, you know, I can't use that to make money. But that's just because he hasn't thought about it.
So I'd like to take the time really quickly to talk about how distinctive we are as individuals and how we think very differently from each other. And this is, although frustrating, is very important for, I think, the progression of Black August in the Park. So as any Black person, for instance, I speak, I try to have a voice for the diaspora, like African people, for instance, who also should be a part of this revolution as Black people. We, I think, individually and as people and as cultures, all have very different opinions on what the revolution looks like. And I think we could ask us the same question and we'd all have different answers. But I'd like to say that I think that's what makes this partnership so unique, because we find a middle ground and figure out a way to push forward from a capitalistic lens, a social lens, and everything in between, right? So I wanted to just start that off by saying that.
I also want to add, I think, yeah, y'all can definitely snap for that. Yeah, yeah. I also want to add that I think, and this is my personal, like we said, we all have personal.
Go ahead, preach.
I think I see Black August in the Park as in some ways an experiment in how we can like try to build something new. And so we all have these other things that we're doing that we're thriving in different ways. We bring those perspectives to the table, and like we're kind of daring to do something different together. And it's like our way of taking that risk to say, all right, can we build something that's different, that like isn't exploitative, that like is mutually beneficial for everybody? And it might not look how my ideal of what it will look. It's not going to look how any of our individual ideals may look, but you know, just kind of putting the foot out there and really holding to our values as tightly as possible. And it gets intense. To say the least, but you know, I think it's worth it at the end of the day, because the product is something that we can really be proud of, and that we hope that the community is proud of and feels like ownership over, and like feels like they're a part of, and like we all trying to do this together.
Did you have something to add?
just on the creatives piece that you mentioned about whether or not we can build and grow communities without exploiting or displacing creatives.
Well, and the reason why I'm picking you out is just because you work for the Chamber of Commerce. So I'm curious as to your take on this.
Yeah, no, I fight this fight every day, right? And I think a little bit of it is about, I hate to overuse the word culture, but changing the culture in the way that we do economic development, the way that we think about growing cities and economies. To Beasley's point, traditionally, it's almost assumed that it has to be exploitative, right? It's like, you know, to your point about artists land in an area that no one wants to be in or that is foreseeably downtrodden or economically disadvantaged, and artists make it cool. The minute that artists make it cool, there's a brewery and a coffee shop quickly behind it, and then there's a condo, and then there's, you know, then there's business that follows. And the folks that made it cool are typically displaced, right? And I think that resonates not only with artists, but with black folks, right? Because oftentimes, well, forever in the history of this country, black people have been forced in certain pockets of communities due to Jim Crow, segregation, slavery, et cetera, and sort of that history of white supremacy, but landed in those places and made them dope, right? Created culture there, created, I mean, we saw this in D.C., right? With the gradual gentrification of Southeast D.C. and them trying to push go-go music out, right? When go-go is the thing that created damn near everything in that neighborhood, right? Go-go was that unifying force. And I think black people, you know, we are alchemists. We create something out of nothing, you know what I'm saying? And I think globally, right, across the globe, and artists do the same, right? So, and I think, you know, black folks being sort of the premier purveyors of art historically as well, we expect that we're going to be exploited when we think about the conversation about growth and economic development and incentivizing business and all of those things. But to Beasley's point, I think we just have to be a lot more creative in the way that we do that and not assume that growth has to be exploitative or that people have to be displaced. And one of the ways that we do that, I think, is thinking about compensating the people who created this before you, right? And thinking about, if I'm going to land here and I'm going to create an economy on something else, but really build it on the back of your culture and your creativity, your music or your art, whatever, or your food, then compensate those people, right? And I think that's a piece of the puzzle that's missing. At least as an artist, I see, you know, we go in, we make something dope, and then it's like everybody gets paid but the artist, right? And I think that's also something black folks can relate to. We go in, we create something dope. You know, Jay-Z referenced it. We took the projects and made a way out of it. You took it and gentrified it. That's a real experience for black folks. And we should think about compensating folks a little bit better and making sure that you know, people get to choose where they want to live and how they want to move and how they want to generate income, and not always be victims of the system, but actually work collectively as a part of it. And, you know, capitalism is a complex thing, so it's not that we can quickly eliminate it, right? But I think we have to try every day to do a better job.
So, you know, culture, I've always felt like culture is an asset. You know, with a company, if you are authentic and you have a strong cultural foundation. And when I say that, I'm not talking about the culture of the company in terms of how, you know, the team interacts with each other and things of that nature, but I'm saying using your culture as a part of what it is that you do. For example, you know, I am a creative director, and, you know, I've told people plenty of times that I'm inspired by hip-hop and comic books. You can see some of my work, and you could look at that logo and probably see some hip hop and comic books in it if you look close enough. You can see some of the inspiration, but that's what I use, and I use that in order to make money. I use that in order to do what it is that I do. Is it possible to do that and not exploit, you know, who you are? So can you use your culture, your own personal culture, for economic gain? And at what point, where is the line? Because, to your point earlier, you know, there are plenty of times where they just kind of come out and say, hey, here is such and such, and they're doing things for the community and they're black. You know, they're not going to say that, but that's pretty much what it is. But is there a line? Is that how do we handle that? How do we wear our culture on our sleeves, make money off of it, or not? Like, do we do that, you know?
Okay. Well, I was going to say, so I'm the owner of Beats and Bars Hip Hop Festival also. And so one of the things that when I created it and then later and John Law came to help is what I felt that same kind of temperament. And it became to be a mission of like helping, like understanding what the culture of hip hop means, and also knowing where it originated from and why it's so important to people in the community, and using that to actually like educate and help and heal people. So I don't look at it as a way of exploitation, just because in a matter of like, there's a lot of free things that I give people in that notion, and then I'm literally paying people to come and educate and help. Like last year we had State come and talk about wellness and hip hop, right, and being a vegan and understanding like you don't have to be out here on lean and pills and do craziness just to be a hip hop artist. Like you can live a very healthy, sustainable life. And a lot of people were influenced by that, right? And so I can't remember if that was a free programming or not, but for me, I find like a real good middle ground to be able to offer information to people that is free, that will help them, that will help empower them, and also inspire them to be better and be different. And for me, like you, like hip hop is one of my big things too, right? And it's like, it's Black people, it's music, it's culture, and it's everything that brings people together in a community with music and dance and art. And so whenever I have an opportunity to try to like empower a person around hip hop culture and music and art, I always figure out a way, well, who can I find that's like that best person to pay to come and give that to people, and figuring out how I can give it to people without me like not having money for my light bill. You know what I'm saying? But like at the same token, like making sure I'm a server. Like I love to serve people. And so whenever I can do that for people so they can be better and be well, like my partner is a plant-based person now because of going to that session with Stickman. You know what I mean? So it's like
he don't eat meat?
Well, he eats some fish. But like, that's it. No meat no more. No meat anymore.
Where he at? I saw him earlier.
Right there.
He looked a little smaller.
Yeah.
He just eats like salmon or cod, but otherwise all plants.
You a steak. So you're getting a little smaller.
No.
This is on purpose.
Oh. No, but you understand my point, like helping Black people be educated to like their health, you know what I'm saying? Like coming out of like our old slave mentality of eating like pork and all these things. No shade if anybody eats pork, but I'm just saying like, you know what I mean?
No, I get it, yeah. I get it. But you?
I wanted to make sure Janelle didn't have anything to add to that.
I don't. It's hard for me to wrap my mind around that question because I feel like we, as Black August and the Park, we don't make decisions from that lens. So even with the Black-owned businesses that are here today, like we barter, we offer payment plans for sponsorships. We try to make mutually beneficial partnerships. So it's hard for me to even think about how to answer that question as Black August in the Park, because we try to do everything opposite than that.
I get it. I mean, I think that one of the biggest issues is sometimes people feel guilty about it. I think we feel guilty. You know, we're doing something good and potentially, you know, there is a cultural element to it. It's like, should I be making money off of this thing? Should I not be making money off of it?
Yeah, we go through that a lot.
Well, you know, so I'll be transparent. Like, it's for me and Moses argue all the time about this because I feel like I struggle with, I'm not gonna be too transparent, but I struggle with, you know, knowing that the work we do is a lot of work, like a lot of work. A lot goes into this and a lot comes out of it. And we do it because our heart, we love our people. We love what Black August means. We love what George Jackson and individuals did for us, right? And we wouldn't be here in the position we are in if it wasn't for those individuals, right? And so I harass Moses about like our future plans because I see, you know, I'm a mom. I take care of my mother. I'm an entrepreneur. Like we all have our goals and things we go through. And it's like, you know, where's the money at? Because we see all these people that come through. And, you know, Janelle has done an amazing job with the brunch for the last couple of years. And, like, shout out to Janelle real quick. Because, like, this fundraiser, fundraiser does a lot for Black August in the Park, and this money goes to Black August in the Park. And it's like, if we had every person that came to Black August in the Park that gave $5 to $10 to $20, we would not be struggling like we do. And it's just, it's hard because you see people, they put money into going to Afropunk, or people they put money into these things, hundreds of dollars. And it's like, we have social justice organizations that come out that are there for people to invest in and utilize their services or be a part of the organization or volunteer and help these people. And it's like, some people don't even know they're there. They're there. And it's like, it's frustrating because we're doing this for our community so they can have these benefits and options and opportunities. And then sometimes, the majority of the time, people are like, I didn't know that was there.
Can I add something?
Sure, go ahead. Stop me, yes, please.
No. I think we have grown because of our values. It's forced us to be a little more creative. And so, like for example, at the farmers market, we ask for donations at the door, which we'll be doing tomorrow. Everybody doesn't and can't give donations, but those who can often do, and often give more than the suggested amount. And that's something we're increasingly doing at our events. And so, despite it being challenging, we've like been able to scale up and increase our budgets, and we're doing things that we've never even probably would have imagined we would have been able to do year one. And it is hard, and I think that's the struggle that I think that it, to me, is like what is the big adventure of Black August in the Park for us as a group. Is like, how are we gonna do this without, well, not necessarily without money, but like without money in the way that like we're used to getting it, you know what I'm saying? And so but we have been able to. And so, you know, we've got sustainers that give monthly. Like Crystal said, if all 10,000 people that came threw $5 on average, even, you know, that $5, well, but see, everybody can't afford that $5 ticket, you know what I'm saying? And we want folks to come. And so it's not necessarily about tax. I think that's where like the equity piece comes in. Like, how do we make it available to everybody and kind of shift the culture to where if people feel like they want to give as an investment back into the culture? And so that's just like a conversation that we have to like push forward, and that we are trying to figure out new ways to push forward. And it's hard because it's like a shift in how we think about value. But I think like we've done it in a lot of ways, and we're continuing to do it better as we reach this 5th year anniversary. Moses, I feel like Moses got something to add about that.
Moses,
I can see it in the back of his locks. I can read it.
You can read it in the back of his locks.
Like, let's argue, Moses.
His
come
back
on.
Lock stood up like I got
let's
something
argue
to say.
For the people.
The people want
to
know.
I really wanted to pass on this. I will say, no, I am going to pass on it. I'm not going to speak directly to it.
Go ahead.
No, of course not. Oh, to talk, because yes. I wanted you to talk. So like I said earlier, so let me speak for myself. As an entrepreneur and as someone who is very used to creating projects and having it done a certain way, like I envision and want it, this has been, it's been a test for me. And like that first year was a realization that working as a team, when done right, does miraculous things. And that first year proved that to me. That first year proved that to me. And I leaned into it. I leaned into it. And when I leaned into it, what I realized was I'm not going, like what I see as being a revolutionary or being not being exploitive is not what maybe Crystal sees in that right. And like to go back to what I said earlier, how everyone sees the revolution differently, it's kind of, this is like a micro like cosm of like what that is, right? Like we all see it differently, and getting there is kind of, in your, for your question, is saying exploiting, which is, you know, very, it's a very harsh word, but
yeah, I don't think it's exploiting. I was just challenging you guys when I asked the question. It was to make things interesting, but I think that you guys are doing it the right way.
Yeah.
To
so yeah, I may want to push a little more where Crystal doesn't. Derek might want to like, you know, not talk about it at all. Or Janelle was like, no, we need to let everybody know. But at the end of the day, we know we need to move forward, and that comes at a median at some point in that. And And so it's not black and white as our, can we do this and not exploit, more so how do we move forward in a way that's representative of everyone's view and is good for everyone.
Yeah, one of our values is all of us, so we try to take that into consideration when we make decisions. So
one of the things that I like about it is, you know, we're so different. We all are, you know, and then you all are very different. Watching you all work, you know, some of you guys I know individually, and it's just, like, they working together. Janelle and Moses, like, what? Crystal and Jay, what? That's weird. But it works, you know. Yeah. No, I could. Yeah.
The point is made, though.
Yeah, thank you. But you know, you guys have come together and you've done that, and I would say that, you know, you are an example for a lot of people when it comes to just making something work. Is that the umbra? I mean, the elevator? That's a loud elevator.
Special guest coming up.
Okay. So, you know, but what you guys are doing is something that I think is important enough. It would be great. It would be educational if this was a reality TV show of you all putting this thing together. I think.
Actually, we got a bunch of footage from last year. We'll see what happens.
I'd love to see it. I would pay to see that right there, to see y'all in the room.
How much will you pay for that?
Would y'all pay to see us on reality TV?
Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I'll send you the invoice this week. That's another revenue stream. Right. Invoice will be in the mail. So, but with all that being said, this is the thing. I started my company back in 2006 or so. And Durham was way different back then. And, you know, if you had told me that we'd have something like this going on at the Mutual Building, that's what people used to call it back in the day, the Mutual Building, we would be sitting out here, you know, hanging out in the lobby. This used to be outside, and we would have this thing called Black August in the Park. If you told me that, I would say, wow, in Durham, downtown, ew, you know. But
can we shout out Carl real quick?
Yes, please.
Carl deserves all the praise. Carl, yes. Carl Webb back there. Everyone give him a call.
Carl's not going to like that I do this, but I do want to do this. For the Durham folks in the room, I remember when the Mutual was sold. How many folks are from Durham long enough to remember that? Any Durhamites here? If you read the papers or if you read social media, it was like, oh, man, white people taking over the Mutual. Yeah, hella people said that. Oase was definitely one of them. But Carl Webb is one of the owners of this building, so there is still black ownership in this building. And I think that's important for the legacy of Durham. And so the next time somebody says that the white people took over the Mutual, please send them to Carl Webb and check them out, man. It's very important to me that people know that black folks still have ownership in this historic property. And Carl's really the reason why we're sitting right here today, because he fights with his partners and his team to make sure that black things still happen in this historic black space. So sorry, man. Sorry for that commercial, but got to give the brother his flowers while he's still here. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
I want to shout out his wife, too, Miss Bridget, because she definitely helped us, too.
Yeah. Bridget is a beast.
She is a beast. I appreciate you, Miss Bridget.
Yeah. I love her, and she knows how to party. Listen, I'm still mad at you for taking her away at the Defiant Ones premiere. I'm not going to let you live that down, because we were hanging out and having a great time. So anyway, back then, 2006, I'm not still salty. 2006, you know, I would have never imagined this happening. But here we are. So I say that to ask you all, 10 years down the road, where would we be? You know, what are y'all's, what is the future for Black August in the Park? What does that look like? What does Durham look like if, you know, these things, if these events like Black August in the Park, hell, I'd even say like Art of Cool, you know, Black Wall Street, I'd say all these events that are happening that you see a predominantly black audience come to, what does the future look like if we do it right? if we do this thing the right way, if we incorporate the values that you all have, because I think you have some incredible values, if we can do it the right way, what does Durham look like? And what does Black August in the Park look like?
I'm going to say that's really not for us to say. And I think our mission is to, what's the mission, Janelle? Hit that.
I feel like I'm the only one that has this memorized. All right, here we go. Let me see. The mission is to creatively inspire and connect people of the African diaspora to engage in cultural and social change. Yeah. And what's the...
That's it.
Nah, it's one more part. We just did a vision session.
We work. Yeah, insert their value. Exactly.
Insert their values. And so, and just by the way, our the values are on the doilies.
No, I think it was doilies.
I think it might be doilies. It's doilies. Thank y'all.
I was trying to make her feel better about it.
No, doilies. You can. I don't mind being corrected. That's okay. It's doilies.
They doilies today though.
Our values.
Okay, the doilies.
Doilies. No, I'm gonna say it right there.
It's cool because, like, I call that stuff back there Romulade sauce. That's not what it's called. Oh no, yeah, I heard you say, "Oh no, baby." Yeah.
What is Romulade sauce?
Romulade is the way I like to call it's Rumalade or something like that. But I like calling Romulade because it looks like Romulade when you look. It's just like my dad calls Chick-fil-A Chick-a-fil.
Oh my!
Only because when he looks at the word, he feels like it should be Chick-a-fil, not Chick-fil-A. It's the worst thing in the world. You do that too? Oh, okay. I thought it was solidarity. Yeah. Okay. So, all right. But the future, where are we going? You have a mission. You have a mission.
But the biggest part of that mission is inspiring folks in the community to create cultural change. So Black August in the Park is a space where you can come and connect with different social justice movements who are doing work locally, regionally, globally, nationally. It's a place where you can kind of discover the history of Black August. It's a place where you can connect with different parts of the African diaspora. I mean, we have our own visions, but it's not for us, I think, as individuals to impose that on the community. But we want to create a space where folks can explore that together. And so I think it's not a vision that we create, even though we have a vision for Black August in the Park, which is spearheaded by Brother Moses Ochola right here with the linen suit. But I think the vision for Durham, we're like in conversation with other people about what that should be. And we want to inform that and show people what's possible through what we can do. That's my piece, I think.
I do want to plug, we're going to, in connection to what Derek just said, we're going to have a focus group, a community focus group, July 24th, I think, at North Star Church. So we want as much community feedback as possible so that we can build an event that speaks to what Derek just said. Like, we can't create something like without community input. Like, we need input, we need feedback, because if we do it based on what we want, then people might not come. So we want to give the people what they want.
And I wanted to add to what Derek was saying about bloggers in the Park. You know, we created the Black Farmers Market and the Black Market also, because we're not doing it just for like the dollar to be recirculated that day. We want you to build relationships with these businesses and these owners to continuously, you know, serve them and invest in them. Like, you know, people that do nails on a regular basis, you know, beauty supply products at Horizon, getting shea butters from Touche, getting clothes and fabrics from different people that own these things. Like, taking the initiative to connect with these people and have a relationship with them, and not just going down to the nail salon on the corner and putting money into another community that's just not yours. When people in our community do these things, they're good at these things, and they exist on a regular basis. So when you come to the Black Market and the Farmers Market, you know, take their number, take their card, and continuously reinvest in them, not just when it's there in front of you, but when you need it on a regular basis, on a monthly basis. So,
well, I know we're getting low on time, so I would just add this one thing. The things that you guys do, the work that you do, it inspires people. And, you know, you just, I don't know if you guys realize the gravity in what inspiration can do. Inspiration can make a person decide to start a company like Facebook. It can make a person decide to run for president, make a person decide to run for Senate, whatever the case may be. But inspiration is so important. And you guys keep doing what it is that you're doing, and you're going to inspire a lot of people. So I want to say thank you. Thank you so much for coming out. Well, thank you for having me, rather. Y'all didn't come out. I came over here. So I want to say thank y'all for having me come out and for us to do conversations here in this space. This is important. But everyone, if you will, please give it up for Black August in the Park.
Is it, you want to talk about what BAP Weekend is going to look like this year? No, you go ahead.
They have a couple of things they want to add. Go ahead, Moses.
All right, so BAP Weekend, August 9th through the 11th. We're starting off Friday, August 9th, with the Bonfrance, and I'll let Derek talk about the Bonfrance.
Yeah, in short, it's a half-day conference where we will bring folks together. We'll have some breakout sessions. We'll have a couple of keynotes. At the Intersection Podcast is going to interview some very special guests, which we'll announce soon. It's a relatively affordable conference. We really want people to leave with not just inspiration, but and I don't want to quite say blueprints, but we want people to build on ideas.
Action plans.
Build action plans and build actionable plans at the conference together. And like everything we do, it's for all of us. And so what that means is across the diaspora, across socioeconomics, across gender, age, and sexuality. And so all types of Black folks are who we want there so that we can build things together. Then after that, we got Afro Soca Love, which Moses can maybe do a little hype on. Afro Soca Love.
Yeah, if anyone hasn't been to Afro Soca Love, it's a beautiful event. Think of like diasporic music at large and people coming together and bridging that all together. Think confetti, think lights. It's like a carnival meets a rave meets a club turn up. Yeah. After that though, I'm really excited about the All Blacks Parade.
That's on Saturday. Yes.
That's going to be before Black
August. All Blacks Parade.
I'm sorry.
Say that again.
Go ahead.
Say it again.
All Blacks Parade. Yeah, All Blacks Parade. So before the before Black August in the Park, what we're going to do, we're gathering four tribes that represent the diaspora: Afro-Latin, Afro-Caribbean, Afro-Latinx, excuse me, Afro-Caribbean, African, and African-American. And what we're doing is each unit is going to represent that culture. And so that includes dressing up to represent that culture, listening to music, dancing, musicians. It's going to lead from, it's going to start at Black Wall Street and lead into Black August in the Park, and that will be the grand opening of Black August in the Park. So we're asking anyone who wants to represent their own culture or a particular culture that they affiliate with to sign up and to be a part of the tribe, and we'll be providing information on that soon.
And then Black August in the Park starts at 4, and it's on Saturday this year. So tell your people come from out of town, you know, they need somewhere to stay. We're working on that. And it lasted till 10 o'clock in the evening. So it's going to be a same vibe. We just adding a few things, extended it a little longer, trying to, broaden out a little bit.
And Sunday we're doing brunch at Golden Belt.
Well, there's one other thing that I didn't hear you all mention. Tomorrow. What's happening tomorrow?
Black Farmers Market, yeah. From 12 to 4.
12 to 4.
We got
give it up for the Black August in the Park. I can't say it correctly. I can't even give it up correctly. It's like, is it right? Black Farmers Market. Please give it up for that.
Yeah.
I want to say the whole thing. I want to say the Black August in the Park, Black Farmers Market. Go ahead, Beasley.
No, I was just saying we got, I think, around 11 farmers from around the region coming, all Black folks, and it's really important that we kind of support Black agriculture and Black land, and land is a big component of what Black liberation, in my opinion. So I think, go ahead, Mosey.
I was just gonna say, come early, because the last Black Farmers Market guys came in CP time, didn't get any produce.
I heard that. A lot of people said, yeah, they didn't have anything. And then other people were like, yeah, they did, but you missed it.
So we added farmers. So hopefully, you know, we want them to do well, but we want people to be able to get what they need too.
Right, right.
We'll have some non-farming vendors as well. So different crafts, some retail, clothes, things like that.
Cool. Well, everyone, usually at this point we would do Q&A, but we're short on time. So I apologize for that. And I would encourage you to go up to these people as you see them walking around and ask them all the questions. I also encourage you to go on Facebook, go on Twitter, go on Instagram. Yes. Yes.
That's my child, y'all. Hold on.
Yeah. Yes, Lord.
Keep it down now.
So I encourage you to follow them on social media. Where can they find you guys on social media if they want to follow?
Black August NC on Instagram, and I think Black August in the Park on Facebook. And our website is blackaugustinthepark.com.
You go to your nearest barbershop and you'll probably find a really, really dope poster. Photography, is it by you, Beasley?
I know it's at my dad's barbershop.
It's a mix. Dari's got a lot of photos on there. I have a few. I think D-Nice. There's a few different photographers' photos represented in that collage.
Really nice photography, really, really nice work. But I encourage you to follow them and follow their story. Support them, support each other. You know, let's make this ecosystem happen, all right?
Also, if you haven't bought a raffle ticket yet, please check out all the cool items that people have donated and buy raffle tickets for them. They're right over here, all Black businesses. So make sure you guys check those things out too, please.
Get a raffle ticket, y'all. All right? Get some more drink, and we're getting ready to transition, right?
Yeah, I'm going to invite Amarachi back up.
She'll
transition for us.
There she is, because she was holding up signs telling me you need to go now.
No, 5-minute warning.
Come on back up. We're done. Thanks, everyone. Give it up for Black August in the Park.
I have something about some standards.